Yes, we are. Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Yes, I told you yes. Tim Hasselbeck. Every Wednesday at noon. Timmy, what's up? It's been a while. Happy New Year.
It's been a while. I appreciate you guys being flexible with me. I mean, has there been anything to talk about since I've been up?
Yeah. No? Yeah, there's been a lot, actually.
Nothing going on in Nashville?
There's been a lot going on.
Not a thing, Tim.
Let's just say.
I looked on social media for a second, and it was like, Darren, you were going like, GIF after GIF of just like, I'm assuming you were searching like shocked face, surprise. Like, what'd you type in to get all of those deals you were?
Holy moly.
Holy shirt is what I typed in.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Holy moly.
Holy molies. A lot of holy molies. As you can tell, I was a little bit surprised by Monday night's news.
I got the sense that you were surprised.
Yeah.
That's received.
We had Trent Dilfer on the show yesterday, and you were actually brought up in the interview. I know that probably surprises you or doesn't.
Shocking.
You want to hear a little snippet of my question?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay.
Is Tim Hasselbeck, was he a better quarterback or is he a better color commentator, in your opinion?
Way, way, way better color commentator. I will say this, not just because they're two of my best buddies on the planet. Tim and Matthew both have become fantastic at calling college football games.
Wow, okay.
Now, they make most of their money being NFL analysts, like we all work together at ESPN. But I text Matt the other day. I said, I know you're not going to do this long-term because, you know, you're killing it on Sunday Countdown. But they are both fantastic calling games. The guy that worked for me for 9 years at ESPN, still works for me and for my foundation, produces both of them when they're on the road. He's kind of the guy that goes on the road with them. And I text him every time they call a game. I'm like, did you give them that or did they come up with that on their own? They've both become fantastic at what they do. In fact, I enjoy listening to their games as much as anybody. And Tim wasn't a very good quarterback. He'll tell you that.
Yeah. Every time I tried to bring up your quarterback play, it was a pretty quick conversation.
Wow. Wow.
What?
Wow.
Your thoughts.
There's a couple of things I'm wrong. Is I make most of my money from 102.5 a game. Okay? That's the first thing. Okay?
You're welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Chase. So I don't know what Trent is talking about there. And then the other thing is the guy he's talking about on the road, this guy Joey Roberts, who worked at ESPN for a long time and still works with Trent and some of the stuff he does with high school quarterbacks. Most of the stuff that I say I get from him. That definitely is the case. It's not original. Yeah, that was interesting. He must need a favor from me because that was about as nice as Trent can be towards me or Matthew. He must need a favor. I'm probably going to get called here soon.
He did build you up, but I was kind of – he was very quick to answer the question. He didn't need to think about it. It was very, very quick and, you know, distinct that he was way better. By the way, let me say this, and I was going to bring this up the next time we talk to you. We were down in Dallas all week last week, and we did the show on Thursday, and then Chase and I went straight to the airport and flew back Thursday night. We got a chance on the airplane, which a lot of the ride was not fun, a lot of turbulence, but we got a chance to watch your game and listen, and you did a really good job. We watched a big chunk of the Tennessee-Indiana, mainly the entire second half, so good job.
Well, thank you. Well, the second half was a lot better for
us. Yes.
Than the first half was. They're an interesting team. They really are because I think they have – and in the state of Tennessee, there's a lot of really good high school football players. And there's a lot of talented kids on that roster still. That's a program that should be good every year. It should be really competitive every year. And – they've got to get the quarterback situation figured out. They really do. And
what do you mean by that?
That's something you can do. Well, you know, Garantano is probably not the answer for them at quarterback. He probably isn't. And I don't know that they've handled him the right way. And he's obviously made some, you know, mistakes and done some things that, look, if I were coaching him, probably, you know, would question, you know, how much I could really trust the guy on the field. And so I think it's just a combination of things that, you know, unless something drastically changes, you know, with his play and his consistency and his ability to just anticipate, you know, I can't imagine that they feel like Brian Maurer really the answer. And so, you know, they're pretty excited about the kid they have coming in. And I just, to me, that's a position where I feel like you have so many, like you have good wide receivers, you have good linemen, you have good backs. Like it should be easy to get a quarterback that wants to come play at Tennessee. And, you know, you got a quarterback coach who won the Heisman Trophy. You've got a receivers coach that won a national championship as a quarterback. Like, I just feel like you should be able to get guys. I mean, you should have your pick. You should be competing with anybody for quarterbacks. And so I think you should be able to fix that problem. That's my take on it.
Everybody that I've talked to, there's a couple that are in the know on this situation. What they're telling me is, and I was a little bit surprised by this, the vibe they get absolutely is that he's coming back next year. So what do you do?
Well, I tell you, I mean, I asked Jeremy Pruitt straight up, you know, what do you think, you know, with the way it's gone that Jarrett comes back? And he said he 100% is coming back. Like, there's no – I don't have any doubt that he is coming back. So, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing. Here's the thing I would say for Jarrett. Like, if he entered the portal, where's he going? Like, where – like, who's like, oh, wait, can't get wait to get our hands on him? You know, and not to say he's a bad player, because I don't think he is, but I don't think that there's a situation where, you know, all of a sudden he's picking and choosing better opportunities for himself somewhere else. You know, and then when you look at it, you know, from Tennessee's perspective, well, can it get a little crowded and can it muddy your competition sometimes to have too many guys in the quarterback room? Yeah, I think it can if you don't handle it the right way. But you also have some time. You know, you have spring football. You have, you know, some of the you know, summertime to kind of, you know, see how guys kind of take charge and lead. And then you have, you know, summer camp. So, you know, I'd rather have more options at quarterback than less. But, you know, I don't think that he's necessarily done enough to say, like, hey, he's definitely going to be our quarterback next year. I mean, I want to put it at that in that spot.
Tim Hasselbeck on the line with us. We had Jeff Fisher on the show about an hour ago. We had some great stories for him. Today is the 20-year anniversary of the Music City Miracle. Of course, he faced the Ravens three times as the head coach of the Titans in the playoffs. Before we get into that Ravens matchup, I do want to get, just because of your background and that market and how much we've talked about the Patriots with you over the years, everybody has been quick to say the Titans have just ended the dynasty, that thing is coming to an end. It's coming to a close. That's it. Where are you on where all this is going with the future of the Patriots? Tom Brady and everything in between.
Well, I would say this. As long as Belichick is there coaching that football team, I think they're going to be really good and competitive. You know, will they have a run, you know, once Tom Brady leaves that's similar to the run they had under him? Probably not, but look, he won a bunch of games with Matt Castle. He won a bunch of games, you know, he won games with Jacoby Brissett, won games with Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, I think Bill Belichick is as good a coach as ever been around the game of football, and they're going to still be really good when they change quarterbacks. I believe that to be the case, because I think they'll find another good quarterback or get a guy that can play well at the position. So I don't think that we need to, like, put a bunch of nails in the coffin of the New England Patriots, even if Tom Brady is gone. Now, what do I think about Brady's situation? I don't think it's his call. And I think that's what's really interesting about this. I think both sides are posturing. You know, Robert Kraft is quick to say, like, hey, he was the one that wanted to be a free agent. And, you know, then you think about, you know, comments earlier this year from Tom Brady's father, you know, in a radio interview, basically saying, well, it's in Bill's hands. I mean, it's up to Bill whether or not Tom comes back. I kind of get the sense that, you know, as quarterbacks are making, you know, well over $30 million a year, like what kind of deal are you going to sign Tom Brady to? Are you going to sign Tom to a two-year $60 million deal, and then at that point he's, you know, you're paying $30-something million to a guy, was 44 years old. Like, I just think Bill Belichick's able to divorce himself of the emotion of, wow, this guy's done a lot for our organization. I think he's got the ability to do that. And you've seen him move on from really good players, Hall of Fame caliber players. And I just get the sense that not totally Tom's call. So if he wants to come back, I don't know, A, if they want him, and then B, if they do want him, at what price?
Well, there seems to be a lot more chatter that he's gone than he's back. So however the dynamic is behind the scenes, do you agree with the chatter, or do you think they get it worked out and he's actually back?
I think they ultimately get it worked out in the end. Now, I don't think that that means that here's why I said it. I think the best fit for Brady is New England, and I think the best fit for New England is Brady. So, you know, I think you can do the dance and you do everything, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, it's just, let's work this out. Like, we like you, you like us, let's figure this out. You know, does that mean that the Chargers couldn't be a possibility? No, I think the Chargers could be a possibility. But do I think the Raiders could be a possibility? Maybe. I think maybe they could be. But and I think it's going to be – I said this to you guys a couple of weeks ago. You know, I think it's going to be a fair amount of QB movement and at least availability. And, you know, and so I think that's going to make – that can make things interesting. But there's too much – I just feel like there's too much like, hey, we legitimately are negotiating here for it to be a done deal. But ultimately, I do think they're back together.
All right, we've got so much more to get into with Tim Hasselbeck on the other side. Certainly we will touch on the game against the Ravens. We'll get into that with Tim. Matt Rhule gets a huge deal. He's going to be the next head coach in Carolina. McCarthy's in Dallas. A lot of ground to cover on the other side. But right now I want to talk to you about the good folks at USS, United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area right here in Middle Tennessee since 1994. They've got more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers. And I know I'm talking to a lot of homeowners out there right now. So if you've noticed when you're out there doing yard work or just a walking around and you see some of your bricks cracking, or you've got walls bowing or doors or windows sticking, drywall separating, maybe your chimneys are tilting or leaning, these are all signs. These are just some of the signs that maybe something's going on with your house that you need to get checked out. Usually you don't want to walk away from something like that. And why would you call USS? Because if it's serious, they're the experts. They've got the reputation. They've got the integrity. That's all important to them, and they give you quality work. Plus, they're going to give you free estimates. I just told you, they're locally owned, licensed and insured. As a homeowner, these are all things you want to hear, right? Just so the comfort level for you to feel, go, this is serious. It could be something serious. Or they may come out there and tell you nothing to worry about. No big deal. They did that with my house. They came out and gave my home a clean bill of health. And maybe that's the case with you. Either way, if you've got some of these things or something going on that may concern you, get them out there. Give them a call. 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. You can always go to their website to learn more about them. USSTN.com. As they promise, we guarantee our best. Call USS.
Tim Hasselbeck continues his conversation with us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Tim, let's look at the matchup between the Titans and the Ravens coming up here. We've tried to pick the brain of everybody we've had on this week about the uniqueness of Baltimore's offense and how they are just carving everybody up. So as you've watched it evolve, because I was looking at it with my son this morning, we were trying to figure out when the last time they lost. They actually lost two in a row early in the season. They were 2-2 at one point, but then all of a sudden they went to another level here. How do you try to slow them down? Because nobody's been able to do it for a long time.
Yeah, well, I think you have to have a real good plan for you know, this read stuff that they're doing, you know, in the run game where, you know, the ball goes to Mark Ingram or Gus Edwards coming downhill. They're reading the defensive end or, you know, an edge player. And then, you know, Lamar Jackson's got the ability to keep it and, you know, do some good things with the ball. And then I think, you know, in an effort to kind of stop that run game and play 11-on-11 football, which you probably heard a lot of people talk about this year, you know, what it has forced a lot of teams to do is play zero coverage man-to-man, meaning it's man-to-man with no help anywhere. And so what's happened with that and the tight ends that they have is, you know, they can find a matchup that they like, and you're throwing basically one-on-one routes with no help, which has helped, you know, Hayden Hurst, and it's helped Mark Andrews, and that's been hard for people. The other thing that happens is they're playing with, you know, three tight ends on the field at times, and, you know, almost all the time it's two tight ends, but sometimes it's, you know, it'll be two tight ends, and then it'll be a 295-pound defensive tackle that's playing fullback. Well, as a defense, what you have to do is put bigger, slower guys on the field to defend that. And then when Lamar ends up keeping it, now you have bigger, slower guys on the field, and you have somebody really fast carrying the football. So I think it's really hard. I think you have to have a really sound plan for essentially defending the option. That's what you need to do. And, you know, I've sat all season long next to John Fox, who was a really good defensive coach in the NFL for, you know, over 20 years. And I think one of the things from just talking to John about how to defend it is that it helps when you have a defensive coordinator, and I think that the Titans have this, that coached in college and had to defend the veer and had to defend, you know, a traditional triple option and had to defend the wing T at some point. Because there's a depth of knowledge in terms of how you can try to attack that. And I would expect them to try to do some different things, you know, based on the fact that Dean Pease has been around the block, knows a lot of defense.
Let's flip it to the other side. Can the Titans offense, in the groove that they're in right now, A, score enough, or B, or maybe it's and or, keep the ball enough to sort of match what we expect? The Ravens are not going to get shut down in this game, but the Titans offense is playing so well that could they do enough to balance it out some and give themselves a chance?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I think it's a bad draw for the Ravens because of just the ball control nature of what the Titans should be able to do. The Titans' offensive line is a better run-blocking offensive line than pass-blocking offensive line. There's no question about that. They have a guy that's playing tailback that's basically a defensive end. I mean, you know, Derrick Henry is so big. Go, when you watch that New England game, I think Earl Thomas made a comment about this week. Their secondary players were turning contact down really before the second half even. Like, he got the ability to just lean on you in the run game. And I think, you know, you're right, Willie, in that you're going to give up some plays just based on the fact that, you know, sometimes you'll have the right defensive call, but Lamar is going to be better in space than the guy that you have defending him. And so they're going to pick up a first down, and they're going to extend a drive, and they're going to score a touchdown. I mean, that is going to happen. But if you can limit those opportunities, then I think you just have a much better chance. And I think one of the ways you limit those opportunities is don't give them an extra possession by, you know, you staying on the field a little bit longer and controlling the clock. I just think they're built in a way to kind of grind it out against Baltimore, which a lot of teams just don't have the ability to do.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, here with us on Darren Donick and Chase. So last week, as we've discussed, the offense, 74% of it was Derrick Henry, and that's really all they needed to get the job done. Ryan Tannehill did not have to do too much. He had over or under 100 yards passing. Did have one mistake that didn't cost him as badly as it could have. But what do you expect to see out of Tannehill this week against Baltimore in that defense?
Yeah, I think he can play well. No, I just think you have to be careful. You know, Marcus Peters loves to take a bunch of chances. You know, you look at, you know, Earl Thomas is a guy that's got great instincts. Now, he doesn't have great speed. So I think there's probably also some opportunities there. I just think when you I think he can play well. Like, I think that, you know, he, what he did in the second half of the season, I think, you know, when you do it for that period of time, that sample size being that big, I think he can play great in the postseason. I think the other aspect of his game that I don't feel like has been talked about enough is he's a really good athlete. I mean, and he's, look, he's not Marcus in terms of, you know, speed and at this point in his career and things like that. But I think that his athleticism has been a major asset and been a big part of why he's played well. When you look at, you know, a couple of plays that he's made even towards the, you know, the end of the season, just kind of buying a little bit more time, you know, some move the pocket plays, which obviously end up being paired well with some of the stuff they're doing in the run game. I've kind of been out on an island on Kirk Cousins for a while in terms of thinking that he can play at a high level. But I think that in some ways, you know, their games can be pretty similar in terms of, you know, better athletic ability than people give them credit for, accurate passing, and when they have a run game, they can end up being really dangerous.
Tim, you know, we're best friends, so we were at dinner the other night talking, and you looked at me and said, Joe Judge is going to be the next head coach of the New York Giants. I mean, you called it. You thought that was going to be the hire, and turns out you were right. All seriousness, I'd never heard of him, and he ends up getting the job. Matt Rhule goes to Carolina. What have you made of some of the coaching moves over the last few days?
Well, it's been surprising to me. I have a really good friend that's on the Baylor coaching staff and been with Matt Rhule for a while. I thought they were going to New York. And so the Joe Judge hire, somewhat surprising from the standpoint of, I just thought that that's where Matt Rhule was going. I mean, Matt Rhule declined to interview for the Browns job. And I think it was in part because he had a pretty good feeling that he was going to end up in New York. Not surprising that a coach from New England gets hired, especially somebody that, you know, I've seen a lot of people talking about special teams coaches, and there is some truth to the fact that a special teams coach is addressing a bigger group of guys than most position coaches, and they're coaching guys that are on both sides of the ball, and there are elements of being a special teams coach that I do think helped you, you know, be able to handle being a head coach in the NFL. So it's a little bit surprising for me, although I think that the Giants are probably a little bit less concerned about X's and O's and an offensive coach when you think about, you know, Ben McAdoo to Pat Shurmur. I think they're less concerned about the X's and O's and more concerned about, you know, somebody that can kind of just, you know, hire good coordinators and put a plan in place that's similar to what the plan has been in New England.
Can Mike McCarthy fix the Dallas Cowboys, and will Jerry Jones allow him to do that?
Look, I actually think Jerry's going to let him coach. And I also think that for all the heat that Jerry's, you know, been given about being the GM and always talking and all of that stuff, they have a really talented roster. Mike McCarthy, I think, gets blamed a lot for, you know, the struggles in Green Bay. But, yeah, I realize he took over before Aaron Rodgers had really ever played, and Aaron's first year wasn't great, and then Aaron Rodgers became Aaron Rodgers. So I think he's a good coach. I think he can get the best out of Dak Prescott. I do think that he has learned from his time as a head coach. I think he'll do a good job. I actually like the hire quite a bit. I think he prefers to be just kind of a football guy. I don't think he'll be bothered by the fact that Jerry does a lot of talking.
Three road teams won last weekend in the wild card weekend. Could have easily been a clean sweep with all road teams winning all four. How do you see this weekend's actions in the divisional rounds playing out? What intrigues you the most?
You know, well, I think the Tennessee-Baltimore game intrigues me a lot. The other one that intrigues me is Minnesota. You know, I think they're a really dangerous team. And, you know, you're going to go play a Niners team that I think is really good. But at the same time, like, I don't think that there's, you know, there's necessarily a ton of experience. Obviously, a quarterback and, you know, a head coach kind of, you know, being in that situation. So I think there's a couple of really good ones where, you know, the home team, yeah, I'm sure people are feeling really good about it, but I could see upsets in both of those games.
You mentioned the Vikings. We've been discussing this all through the process here. But the play at the end of the Vikings-Saints game, how did you see it? Because I the guys on NBC were pretty emphatic. Tony Dungy and Rodney Harrison thought bad call, should have been. I didn't think it was that clear-cut, but based on how this whole process has evolved from the start, what should have happened in your mind?
Well, the rule was put in for pass interference that was, you know, pretty legitimate pass interference at the end of a game that was going to determine the game. That's why the rule was instituted. To me, when I look at that, I think pass interference easily could have been called. The Kyle Rudolph push-off, yeah, he extended his arm and it gave him an advantage in terms of separation. Like, so I think it could have been called pass interference. I think that the NFL should have stopped long enough to really investigate it and look at it. Just like I thought at the end of the Seahawks 49ers game week 7 that was going to determine the NFC West, I think they should have stopped and looked at that play because Jacob Hollister is getting held before the ball gets there. Like, to me, that definitely should have been called pass interference. And they should have stopped, taken the time to look at it, not blown by it, and been like, yeah, we looked at it. Doesn't rise to the level of a foul. Like, wait a second. We basically changed the rule, and the only thing we got from it were things like Bill O'Brien, you know, challenging defensive pass interference on the first drive of the game, not being overturned, and the only time you were getting OPI overturned and when it was a pick or a rub play. Like, that wasn't the purpose of the rule. So I think they need to get rid of the rule. And I think that was, to me, that was not used properly. I'll take it a step further, though, in terms of what I thought of the officiating this weekend. I thought what happened in the Houston-Buffalo game was nearly criminal.
Oh, do tell.
To me, that is that's an illegal forward pass in the end zone, which should amount to a safety, and Houston should be kicking the football off. Like, how the officials can be like, hey, you know, hey, let's let common sense prevail here. That's not, we don't want officials using common sense to try to figure out what someone was doing. I would ask you guys this: if you're winning and there's 30 seconds left in the game, and the other team doesn't have a timeout, and you're in victory formation, and the quarterback takes a snap, what are you expecting the quarterback to do?
Kneel down,
spike the ball.
You're expecting him to take a knee.
I mean, now, take a knee.
He
sorry.
Takes the snap, turns around, and flips it to the official.
Okay.
But everyone knows he was going to take a knee. What is it?
So you do not agree with what them gathering up and coming back and saying, wait a minute, that's not what you think the original call should have stuck?
No, I think the original call of a touchdown was wrong.
Okay.
But it was a scoring play and should have been reviewed. Should have been an illegal forward pass in the end zone, which is a safety, and they should have been kicking off.
Oh.
I do not think they got it right by being like, yeah, he meant to, you know, kneel down. I don't think that's the right, not even close.
Okay.
I think they got that totally wrong.
So there is because they were referencing like it's a give up. Like you don't, there is no real give up.
No, I mean the rule is if you take a knee or you are down on the ground, and the key word is and don't attempt to advance the ball forward. It is not or don't attempt to advance the ball forward. Again, I just use that example. Like, so if you're going to take a knee, you know, at the end of a game, if the quarterback doesn't take a knee, turns around and flips the ball, like, are we just now going to be like, yeah, they're in victory formation, guys. We know they want to take a knee. Is that what we're going to do?
Hmm. That's a good – I mean, I didn't really think about it that way because I was
true.
Like, yeah, that – interesting. That is interesting.
So the player did the wrong thing.
Well, why? Let me ask you something, Tim. Then why hasn't there been the outrage?
I have no idea. Maybe because it was the first game on Saturday, when they called the game, you know, the crew basically was like, yeah, you know, John Perry's in there going, oh, glad common sense prevailed and, you know, and all of that. I mean, maybe that's why. Maybe because it was Houston and Buffalo. You know, maybe that's why. But to me, I'm like, I can't believe – and by the way, it affected the outcome of the game.
Sure did.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game of inches. It's a game of inches in detail. Like, they matter. And I think that just being like, yeah, we know what he meant to do, like, that's not okay. To me, that rises to the level of, like, DeSean Jackson's running for a touchdown.
No one's going to catch him. He's at the 1 yard line. And he starts to, you know, basically celebrate, and he drops the ball at the 1 yard line before he goes into the end zone. And we're going to be like, yeah, you know what, guys? I mean, he was going to score anyway. I mean, he's just like we know what he meant to do.
No, there should be no gimmies, is what you're saying. Like if we're playing golf and you just tap it in from what I'll give you that.
Or you don't have to putt. Pick it up.
You don't have to pick it up. Yeah.
I mean, so there's,
we're not playing that in football. Yeah.
I don't think we're playing that. It's the Masters. Like, it's the playoffs. Like, I just the rules are the rules. Like, do we really want officials being like, yeah, but, I mean, he didn't mean to step out of bounds. I mean, we know what he's trying to do.
Tim, like, I've watched a lot of coverage all weekend and leading up to you joining us today, and I honestly have not seen boo on that. I'm impressed that you're so adamant about it, because I haven't heard anybody talking about it.
But it's not right. It literally is against the rules. And oh, by the way, it was not how it was ruled on the field. You know, so those guys that come running in, you know, the standby officials there, they have earpieces in New York. That was called from New York. Like, let's put all these Titans fans that maybe are listening right now. Okay, put yourself in the Bills situation. You're home. You now are not playing in this weekend's playoff game. And they had a guy catch the ball in the end zone and then just flip the ball to the official. You recovered it in the end zone. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like you the rule was instituted, you know, was used properly? I wouldn't.
I got to be honest. I watched it live, and you've got me really thinking about it. And now the more you're so passionate about it, the more you talk about it, the more I'm completely with you. And now I'm kind of dumbfounded that this has not been – there's not a bigger stink, or there hasn't been any stink at all over that.
Nothing. Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, let's calmer heads prevail here. We know what he
comments. Well, even on the broadcast, they were doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
They were 100% exactly going common sense.
Yeah, and look, I worked at the same network as those guys. I think they're dead wrong. You're dead wrong.
Hey, I think you're a really good analyst, too. Just want to end with that.
I agree.
You and Trent, man, I mean, it's amazing.
There's been a lot of love today. I think so we're starting off 2020 on the right
positive, feeling good.
Lots of love today.
Listen, you know what it is? This was our longest break. I was so busy during the bowl season that this is the longest break we've had in 9 years. It's nice.
You're right. Maybe so you're saying it was the break.
Maybe it was good.
The break was needed. Sure.
It was like, here we go.
We missed each other. That's what you can say. It's all right. We got
talking
it.
About it, and not the rules.
Okay, not that's good stuff. Tim, you have a great week, and we look forward to it again next Wednesday.
Cool. See you, fellas.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck. There, he said the break was needed, and we've come back, and you could tell sides missed each other. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase, but first, Willie's got a word about the good folks at Lee Company.
All right, let's tell you about Lee Company. You might be sitting at your desk right now at work going, you know what? My business, I'm in charge. We've got issues. We got a maintenance problem. Well, Lee Company can do that for you. You may not have a maintenance department in your office or your business. Lee Company can help you with that, whether you're at home or at your business. So if you're at work right now, or if you're driving around and you're heading back to work and you've been thinking about something and you're figuring out who to call to get it fixed, think no further. It is Lee Company. LeeCompany.com. You can make an online appointment. You don't even have to interrupt your day. Just make the online appointment. They will come out and they will address the problem for you. One of an array of things that Lee Company offers to you at home or at your business. General maintenance. But that's not where it ends. I've told you about the home maintenance plan. Also, think about home renovation. If you, in the spring, or even right now, are looking to upgrade a bathroom or a kitchen or whatever, Lee Company does that as well. So contact them at 615-567-1000. That's 615-567-1000 for Lee Company. Proud sponsor, Nashville Predators. We'll be right back. Hasselbeck and Chase. What a great lineup we have had today. Chris Mason, Jeff Fisher, David Poyle, Tim Hasselbeck. But we're not done. Ian Eagle from CBS is coming up at 1 o'clock. So the All-Star lineup rolls as we continue to talk sports with you. So
we'll have Kenny Vaccaro tomorrow. I know you won't be here for that, unfortunately.
I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys after the game. I was watching with Hal Gill the end of the Saints-Vikings game. Great game. It was a great win for the Vikings. I don't know how they pulled that off. That's a hostile environment. Saints had it. You know, you never see Drew Brees turn the ball over like he did towards the end of the game.
But the Saints were playing catch-up. What do you mean? I don't know how they won that. I thought Minnesota was the better team.
I just kept thinking the Saints will find a way. They're going to come down.
Question.
This is a Drew Brees game.
Minnesota, if you really watch the game, they were the better team. They deserve to win.
They played a strong game.
We all had
game.
The feeling, right? Like, you know, Drew Brees. The Saints at the end of the win.
He'll get the ball in the fourth quarter, march downfield, do like he always does.
Yeah, and what's his name? Hill, the number 7. Man, what a football player.
Taysom Hill.
Hill.
Let me say this. He was better than Drew Brees in that game.
He might have been.
He was unstoppable.
Yeah. He might be the Saints' best player. I mean, that's saying something. He is so tough to stop. I mean, I know they got a lot of great players. I may exaggerate a little bit, but how versatile is that guy as a weapon? I wonder if more teams will
I was waiting for the league to figure him out.
Well, what's interesting is, we should have probably brought this up to Tim. They've got a unique situation where they're not. I do not believe they're going to keep all three, right?
No.
Hill, Bridgewater, and Breeze. Somebody's going to go.
Of course, somebody's
going to
go.
So who's going?
I would say it's probably Bridgewater.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think it's now Bridgewater is gone.
Of course he's gone.
Of course?
Oh, yeah. Unless he takes a lot less money than he could probably get somewhere else.
Now, let me say this. I don't think Drew Brees goes out the way that they went out. I don't think he's going to go out that way.
He's not retiring.
So I don't think he's retiring, but I don't think he's leaving. I don't think he's going anywhere else.
Mm-mm.
I think we look at Tom Brady and go, okay, there's a good chance he could go somewhere else. I don't see Brees as that. And I know
I'm keeping Hill. If I'm the
– Oh, yeah.
Like you can't – that's what I'm getting at. Like, you can't let him go.
Taysom Hill is not – he's not the future. He's not the starting quarterback, I don't think. I think he's a nice gadget player that can do a lot of different
things. He's way more than that.
He's more than nice.
I don't know if he's a quarterback, but he is extremely valued in the role he's in, because you could put him at quarterback. You put him at, like, four different positions.
You could have him running the ball. You could have him catching the ball.
He can block.
Yeah. He can block, no doubt. So I wonder if more guys will develop that way. It would be hard, but even if you couldn't do everything, if you could be that type of guy, good enough passer, good enough blocker, good enough receiver, I wonder if that's an evolving position. But
it's too late now, but I think the Titans could have used Marcus Mariota in that role some.
He's not big enough to block like that.
Well, not blocking, but just he has the athleticism. You could put him out wide, do different things with him.
Interesting. I don't know. Like, I think Mariota's too good of a quarterback to do that unless you started off that way. Tebow, I thought of Tebow. You know, could he have been a guy like that? Could have blocked enough, but we'll never know, right? He wasn't developed that way.
They mentioned that on the broadcast, that the Saints wanted to do that with Tim Tebow, but he wasn't willing to play special teams either. Yeah. And that's one thing about Taysom Hill, too, is he doesn't just do all of that on offense. He's out there blocking punts, returning kicks, and Tebow just didn't want to do that.
Tebow probably would have had a long career in the NFL had he been willing to play that role.
I wonder how much money somebody will pay a Hill right down the road if he keeps doing this. So anyway, though, I asked Tim about it. Let's say they did what Tim thought they should have, and I thought they should have. They should have stopped the game a little bit more. They should have looked at it, made the determination. Was that offensive pass interference? Are you comfortable overturning that call on the field? I agree with Tim 100%.
Not me. I would not have.
I was okay with
the no call. I've said it all
Hal
week.
Hal and I disagreed.
So
Hal thought that should have been offensive pass interference. My point is, we were watching the Vikings, we saw Randy Moss. Any number of receivers have done that move for 50, 60, as long as there's been pro football. That's
no
been a move.
Question.
Right? And if you can do it subtly and they don't catch it, in real time, how bad was it, right? I mean, you could have called it.
But
they didn't call it. And so, to me, the call on the field has to stay.
And it was a much bigger guy, right? Rudolph is 6'4", 6'5". That corner's 5'11", 6 foot. So he's a much bigger guy. That play goes on. I mean, you think Gronk didn't do that stuff?
Of course.
In his career?
A lot of guys have. But that was Tony Dungy and Rodney Harrison's point. They're coming at it from the defensive
side. Was Howell screaming for offensive pass interference all the times Gronk did it over the years? I don't think so.
But what I'm saying is, though, Dungy and Harrison were emphatic. That was a no-brainer.
Yes.
They were. They were. I was surprised.
Okay, so let me ask you like this. By the book, is that offensive pass interference?
Yes.
By the book, there's all kinds of calls that get changed.
Right. Yeah.
By the book.
Which is why this is a crazy rule.
You have the same people going, well, call it by the book. And then on the other side of their mouth, they're going, but let them play. So which would you rather have?
Rodney Harrison plays both sides of the
fence all
the time.
And he was notorious for being a guy that would probably get away with something that maybe he shouldn't, and they let him play. I look at it as, could you call it? Of course. Should they have? No. Let him play. This is the playoffs.
Let's just say this. Rodney Harrison knew exactly where the line was, and he was willing to go to that line all the time in his career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of times he had his baby toe behind the line.
He had everything else over it.
Yes.
Okay. So I think it's a little bit hypocritical for Rodney Harrison to be talking about that's a no-brainer.
Right.
When give me a break. Of course, that's also coming from a guy that was in the secondary, a DB. So he's probably going to defend his position that he played. But I'm sorry. I've said it all week. I'm glad they didn't call it. I have no problems with them not calling it. If they called it, okay, I would have understood. Oh, by the way, everybody thinks like, oh, the Saints, the Vikings kicked the field goal. Okay. Do we know what the Saints were going to do?
Okay, well, I have a question about that. But let's
do that on the other side.
Well, I have a place to be.
Do you have to go?
I do have a place to be.
Oh.
All right, here's my question. You guys answer it on the other side. I'll be listening on the way to the airport. The ball, let's say that pass is ruled incomplete or whatever, and the Vikings have fourth and goal from the two. Touchdown wins it. Or let's say from the one.
Now, wait a minute. You're saying they don't call it, they reverse it,
well,
it's
let's
pass
say for whatever reason, because it was third and goal from the maybe
so
second goal from the one.
So it would have been third and long. That's why I said they more than likely wouldn't have got
it. Right.
They would have kicked a field goal.
So this is maybe a different hypothetical, but answer this question for me. It's the first possession. Let's say it's fourth and goal from the one for whatever reason, right? Vikings have fourth and goal from the one. Touchdown wins it. Field goal, chip shot. The Saints get the ball and a chance to tie, chance to win. What do you do? Go for it, fourth and one. Touchdown wins it, or do you kick the field goal? Ponder that, Coach.
All right. We'll do that on the other side.
I'll be listening. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
I'll see you in Chicago.
Love the show, guys. I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Come back and wrap up the third hour next. If you're looking for something to do tonight from 7 to 8 in Bellevue over on the west side of town, Chase, where would be a good suggestion?
The Brew House on Highway 100. Come check it out. We got Julie Turris, Ida Bjorkstad, that is Matthias Ekholm's wife. They're going to be there alongside me, and we're gonna be doing Smashville Live starting at 7 o'clock. So come out to the Brew House on Highway 100. It's there close to Publix, across the street from Kroger. So come hang out with us. Looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
I don't know if it's his wife. I want to check on that. You keep saying that.
That's what that's what I was told.
Okay.
So,
thought it was their fiance. In all seriousness, I think
I know. It's very confusing.
No, I've brought this up before. I've told you. I talked to somebody from Sweden, right? I've told you a story where a lot of people in Sweden, they don't get married because there's no advantage in their country to being married. You know, like here, there's tax breaks, what have you. But in Sweden, a lot of people don't get married because there's that's what I've been told. I haven't lived
when
in Sweden.
When she did the show with Matthias a month or so ago, I was asked how to, you know, what's the title is introduction, and they said wife.
Okay.
So that's what I was told.
Good to know. It was just making sure.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that.
Let's go to Steve, who wants to weigh in. Steve, what's up?
Hey, I'm a season ticket holder, and I just noticed over the years, it seems like we get called for embellishment where a lot of other teams don't. Man, I can't watch all the games, but do you think that we get called or targeted with embellishment more than most?
Have absolutely no clue. I mean, there's just no way of no. I mean, you're asking about we do the same thing you do. I watch a lot of games around the league, but our focus is the Predators. I mean, I just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, they called it on Subban quite a bit when he was here.
They did?
And they called it
called it on James Neal.
Pardon?
James Neal used to get embellishment all the time when he was here.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like I was talking to a guy that's beside me last night, and he agreed with me that we seem like we get called for embellishment more than most things.
Right, but you're just getting. Just guessing like us. You're just throwing something out there that we have no clue. You know what I mean? If there's any validity to it or not. So,
all right.
I understand.
Enjoy the show.
Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, I just, there's no way of knowing. Is there analytics? There are players.
I haven't.
That get the most embellishment calls?
I haven't done a deep dive into that, but I'm sure there are.
But for us to sit here and act like the Predators get hit with it more than 30 other teams, I have no idea.
All right, so are we going to answer Willie's question? Because he's already texted us.
So he has created a scenario that was not even in play.
Right.
Okay. Because
if it's a fourth down,
where was the Minnesota? Where was the Kyle Rudolph? Was that it from the two?
That would have been about the two or three, because they were at the one, and Dalvin Cook got stopped and pushed back a couple years. So it was about the 3 or 4 yard line, maybe, was where that specific play was. But I think Willie's hypothetical was at the one.
Yeah, he's completely changed the whole course of how that would have all played out.
If it's at the one, I'm going for it, because here's how this plays out.
Okay, so here's the scenario. We're using still where this was an overtime game, first possession, and let's say that, just for the sake of this conversation, that play was from the one.
Sure.
Okay, Kirk Cousins throws it up, Kyle Rudolph gets one hand on it, ball goes out of bounds, incomplete pass. Now, fourth and goal from the one. First possession, overtime, what do you do if you're Mike Zimmer? That's his question.
Because if you kick the field goal, you get the points, but you still have to kick off.
You're in the lead.
The Saints and
Breeze.
But now
the Saints get their possession. They could come down and tie it up.
Sure.
And then the game keeps going. Or they could win it. So you could lose. So what do you do?
I would go for it, and here's why. Because you have two possibilities. You either score and you win the game, or you put the ball on the 1 yard line, and Drew Brees and the Saints have to march 99 yards downfield.
Well, they don't have to march 99 yards.
Or get to kick a field goal.
Will Lutz kick a 52 yarder.
Will Lutz missed one that in that game that he probably shouldn't have.
But he's a pretty good kicker overall.
He is.
It's not like they have a scary kicking situation, right? They don't
scary
have a
scary kicky situation.
Scary kicky.
Yeah.
They don't have a bear situation where they're going to doink it off the post.
I would probably rather them start at the one. And have to.
Well, even tell us his answer.
No, he didn't.
He said go for it. On his way out, he told me that he was going for it.
He said go for it.
And then he said an even better question would be, at what yard line do you not go for it? Because I feel like going for it on the one is almost a no-brainer right there. If you can't get 1 yard to win a game, then you probably don't deserve to win the game anyway.
Did anybody watch the Patriots?
Yeah, they didn't deserve to win the game. They couldn't get that yard when it mattered.
Yeah. But I'm saying, we saw it, by the way, this weekend, too. What was the other game? They got same deal. Just like the Titans Patriots, and they did not get in.
Right. If it's inside the three, I'll go for it. If it's beyond that, probably not.
Look, in college, the one is, but NFL, different animal. 1 yard line.
You're going up against animals.
Yeah. I mean, you know they're going to load up those big hogs. It is hard. And this just in, the Titans are the only ones equipped with like a Derrick Henry type, right? He's a one of a kind. I would kick the field goal. I would. I would kick the
take
field
the points,
goal.
And then go play defense.
And then go play defense. It's a chip shot. You're gonna have the lead. Now the only way you lose, the only way, is a touchdown. Trust your defense.
Yeah.
They've been good the whole game.
That's fair. I would rather trust my defense from the one against Drew Brees than kicking off.
But now you can lose. Like you have no. Sure. If you don't get it now, you can lose because all they have to do is get in field goal range, which would be, let's say, their 35. I think. I mean, indoors, Will Lutz can kick a 52-yarder to win it.
Yeah.
Or you can get a safety. Say you don't get it, but, and they're on the one. The way they're pressuring Drew Brees, I mean, you can still technically win it on
and you
defense
would win,
at the one.
You would win on a safety. That's another reason why I would do it, because the safety ends the game.
So, I understand that, but you know, you're counting on a safety to win the game.
The one.
Yeah.
You're on the one.
I kick it. Me, personally, I kick it. Willie says he goes for it. You go for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. We'll come back. Ian Eagle, start the fourth hour. That's next.